We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to In the Know. This is Shamit, and I'm joined by Mason. We're bringing you yet another episode in the seemingly dull off season. Mason, what's been good with you?
Not a lot. Just got into the New Orleans / Metairie last night. My company is moving offices up in Chicago, a whole one block from where we are right now. But we're growing, expanding, and needed a bigger place. So that's good news, but during the in-between time, we don't have an office since everything's getting rewired, moved, all that good stuff. And so took the opportunity to spend a few days here at home with my parents because I hadn't seen them in a few months. So working out pretty well.
Did you take the opportunity to perhaps pitch a potential move to New Orleans / Metairie to your company? I have a feeling there's some very interesting tax benefits they can look into that'll maybe help expand some of their business.
Yeah, didn't make that pitch. I would have to probably plan out a much, it'd probably take a little more planning than that to sell them on this location. And I'm pretty sure as far as the list of expansion cities go, New Orleans / Metairie is pretty low on the list for, generally speaking, for consulting terms, because travel's a nightmare, no direct flights anywhere, expensive, all that good stuff. But yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. So maybe I'll pitch it and let you know how that goes.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's right up your alley as a consultant. I think you'll do a good job on the sell. You can credit me on it when your company ends up saving thousands of dollars. It's free consulting on my behalf.
Yeah, appreciate it. You know, I'll pitch it. I'll credit you, and we'll get you a gig. So you're part of the team.
Sounds excellent. Good. What I am kind of upset about is me not realizing you were going to be in town, because we could have used this opportunity to set up a live podcast, but, you know, never say never. I feel like there will be more opportunities.
Yeah, it's a miss on my part, but I booked it within the last week, saw the $60 Southwest flight, grabbed it, and didn't look back, and that's definitely on me, but we'll figure it out. If not here in New Orleans, just have an excuse to fly up to Chicago and hang out for a weekend. So we'll definitely get that done.
I definitely need to check Chicago out. But speaking of Chicago, We signed a Chicago native, Jaleel.
That was
Okafor.
A great segue. That was not planned, guys. He just came up with that on the fly. Well done.
This is what I'm here for, folks. But we signed Jaleel Okafor, and I'd love to sort of get your thoughts on the signing, and we can break it down a bit.
Why not, right? At first, minimum contract, partially guaranteed. It's fine. There's no risk. We can pull the whole. We can skip the line that McNamara hates so much. Is low risk, high reward, and he would hate us for it. But because I don't really think, and to his credit, there's probably not a potential for a high reward here. It's a guy you're signing on a minimum deal, trying to revitalize his career. And if the offseason videos that have circulated about his game are any indication, maybe he's got a shot to do it. The fit with the Pelicans as a team and what they're trying to do doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but. For a guy who was the number three pick in the draft a couple of years ago, I mean, I don't mind taking a flyer. His teams have been awful with him on the court compared to while he's off the court. So there's like not a lot of good signs and not a lot of good indications that it's a fit. But you take a chance on talent when there's pretty much no risk to your team besides a roster spot. I mean, that's my general take. What are your thoughts?
I think I'm pretty in tune with what you're saying. The Pelicans, by the looks of it, offered him a largely non-guaranteed deal and with a team option for the second year. So if this works out in any capacity, the Pelicans have a fair amount of control over him going into next offseason, which is good. And if things don't work out, they can just cut bait, and there's not much skin off their back. It's not like the Pelicans are pressed up against a hard cap this year. As they were the year before, they have a little bit more breathing room under their hard cap. So I think it's a solid venture into the remaining pieces of free agency. There probably is not a single player out there who has the upside that Okafor does. And I don't think some of these guys that have been mentioned on Twitter, such as like Jamal Crawford or even Joe Johnson, I don't think these guys are entertaining the Pelicans, not at the minimum. Every team in the league can offer them a minimum, so they're probably just going to go where they feel like they have the best chance at succeeding and have the best chance at higher minutes. So for an end of the roster spot, this is a solid pickup. I can't imagine anyone can complain about this pickup. Now, what he actually turns into is yet to be known. He is a disaster defensively, just total disaster. You can look up clips of him online. I think there was a moment last year where like Rondo was shoving people out of the way so he could isolate against Jaleel Okafor. And like, you know, when Rondo's licking his lips trying to get to the rim, it's a problem. So, yeah, I mean, he's insanely gifted offensively. He just needs to learn to work that within a team context. Instead of, you know, I think the teams he's been on largely have been, they have been awful. And his role on those teams has been like, oh, here's the ball, go get a bucket. Rather than, I don't think there's been a coherent system around him. And I don't think he's had the talent around him to maybe elevate his game to the next level. And, you know, if he gets minutes here, which is something I wanted to ask you, you know, the Pelicans obviously have AD, Mirotić, and Randall. And I find it hard to see which other big might get minutes after those three guys. You know, you might as well be going small after that and trying Solomon or Darius at the small ball four before you try another big. Do you think, you know, we have Diallo on the roster, and technically we have Ejinsa and the other Okafor on the roster. Do you think there are actual minutes available for any of those players, and do you think Jaleel can beat out those players?
It's going to be tough in real meaningful minutes. You could see them get some garbage mop up time. I mean, but like the interesting part about this too is that it's such an incredibly team friendly deal for the Pelicans. Not to say it shouldn't have been because of what Okafor has shown on the floor so far in his career, but they have the team option for next year too, if they end up keeping him. And if he shows something, even if it's not something that really helps the Pelicans with their style of play, it's a trade chip. Even if it's not a big one, it's something. And it's, as a bench big, if he shows that he can be even a little better than awful defensively and be a rotation, a few rotation minutes, big man as a guy that I mean, you got to look at all possible angles here. And I'm
can
sure
he
that
be Al Jefferson from like the Pacers or like the year before, can he fill that role? I think that should be the floor you set for him, you know?
That's probably the ceiling you set for him. Man.
That too.
But if we're getting Al Jefferson out of Jalalokofer, then I know not prime Al Jefferson, obviously, but I'm very happy with that. And your question's a good one about can any of those guys beat out Solomon Hill for backup big minutes? And I guess that question opens up a bigger can of worms of where you expect Solomon Hill's minutes to come from. How many three guard lineups? Will the Pelicans play as much three guard lineups as they did last year with Hill hopefully back fully healthy? But yeah, it's tough. I'm sure the same thing applies for Okafor with Jahlil Okafor to Diallo in the sense that we want to see Diallo take a step forward this season, and you're not going to see a step forward without giving him the chance to get there. And I think, not to make this conversation about Cech, but it seems like the perception of his summer league play was on the outside was very different than what kind of my interpretation of his summer league play, which was not that good. He put up numbers, but it felt like kind of empty numbers. And so this is another kind of a make or break year for him too, to see some real improvement. So it's going to, I'm not factoring in a Jensen into the equation at all. At this point, I think the Pelicans would be better served at least trying Jahlil Okafor or Diallo rather than giving Jensen any minutes at all. So that's, these are some of the questions the Pelicans will have to answer. And I think they're hoping to see through training camp and preseason if they can start to answer them.
Yeah, I don't think Diallo is a guy that needs motivation by any means, but I do think that Okafor is a guy that can maybe push him to be a better version of himself, because both of those guys are going to be competing for the same minutes, and the best one's going to win out and get in any given night. You might have a different need from someone, but if Diallo has that sort of pressure behind him, like, okay, there's another guy on a non-guaranteed contract chasing for minutes, and maybe, it brings out a better version. So I'm optimistic in that regard. And also, there will be nights in the season where, you're in February or January and, like, Randall needs a night off or Mirotić needs a night off or, AD tweaked something and he has a night off, where you need one of those guys to step up. And so just them sort of being there to push each other while, the starters can focus on themselves is a small benefit to having a guy like Okafor at the end of the bench. I think Emeka was a great locker room guy. I think he's a total pro's pro, one of the nicest people that I've had the chance to talk to. And I think that Cech actually picked up a lot from Emeka. I think it took maybe three games until Cech was incorporating those back tap offensive rebounds into his game. That's not something he did before Emeka was on the roster. So yep. I think Emeka was really helpful in that regard, but I don't think Emeka could teach Cech much of what to do on the floor necessarily. And I'm not saying Jahlil is some sort of guiding savant, but he's really talented offensively, and going against Cech at practice can at least maybe bring out something. That's my thought.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And once again, Mr. Ehrman will have his hands full trying to get something out of him defensively. So that might be his best work yet if he can make Okafor competent on that end.
So speaking of Mr. Ehrman, he got married last weekend, I believe. And so congratulations to him and his wife. And I think from what I understand, the Okafor deal was completed the day of the wedding, like right before the wedding. So it's an interesting wedding gift for Mr. Ehrman to change, Jahlil Okafor into anything defensively. It's like, here you go. Have fun with this, Darren.
I'm imagining the text conversation that happened as that signing was announced or was made public. And all I can say is, Poor Darren. I hope to get a better wedding gift one day than that. But
I bet he like texted Dell. He's like, this wasn't on the registry, right?
that's brutal. But it's a hilarious troll job. So points for that.
And then to add a level of trolling onto that, Dell and his family left for vacation the following day.
And he's your problem now.
Basically. So get the deal done and like, hey, I'm on vacation. Y'all have fun. But, you know, they're sort of speaking on that. There were some suggestions that, you know, Dell did exactly that. He signed Okafor and Dipps before anyone could ask him questions. I think that's funny. I don't think that's accurate. I don't think Dell is, like, shying away from questions or anything. There was actually a reason behind why the Okafor signing took a little bit longer to materialize than, you know, after their initial discussions. It's because this is something I find out recently. Is it came to a total surprise to me. And it probably should not have been a surprise, but the NBA, it turns out, releases a rough draft or like an alpha version of this, or maybe a beta version of the schedule to all teams beforehand, before the actual public, you know, official release. So each team gets a copy of the schedule, and then each team has an opportunity to sort of comb through their schedule, outline any issues they have with it, outline any problems, and submit those complaints. Complaints is a good word for it, to the NBA, where the NBA reviews them and modifies them as necessary. Now, typically, you know, teams aren't granted all that many changes, but the teams that are granted more changes than others are the big market teams, because these changes are often driven by revenue, you know, which games are going to make the most money, which games have the most visibility, and naturally bigger market teams are a little bit more favored in that. It's tough for the Pelicans to get everything on their wish list. I think from last year they had like 14 or 15 changes that they wanted, and they were granted 3. So,
and then we got a back-to-back-to-back added.
right. And, you know, I think historically, if you look at the various analytics Twitters that break down the strength of schedules and back-to-backs, I think the last few years the Pelicans have not had a great schedule when it comes to the schedule analytics. So this year I'd heard the Pelicans' schedule was not bad, didn't have many complaints on it. So the schedule, you know, was released this past week. And my first glance at it is, yeah, the schedule is not bad. What are your thoughts? Have you gotten a chance to look at it? Got a chance to look at some of the numbers around it?
So I haven't gone through in super great detail yet, but the one I like to look at some of the stuff like miles traveled and number of back-to-backs, and it just generally as the league as a whole, they've really obviously emphasized bringing down number of back-to-backs all over, and there's not going to be that much differentiation from team to team on that front. But as far as miles traveled, that's the thing that really jumped out to me as, holy crap, this is way better than it usually is, because the Pelicans are going to have travel fewer miles than every other Western Conference team. That blows me away. Another thing that blows
which me which means we should be in the East, right? Right?
Sure. Let's go with that. But especially, it also is crazy to me that the Lakers and the Clippers are second and third on that list, even though they play each other in their hometowns and don't have to go anywhere. But yeah, I mean, that's nice in my opinion. I think that's something that the Pelicans are never the worst in terms of miles traveled. That tends to be the a team like Portland in the Pacific Northwest, it just has to go so far all the time. But being where they are, they're, you know, a little under league average in terms of miles traveled. It's nice, and I'm sure they'll appreciate it. And then, I mean, as far as road trips go, I mean, they've got a couple brutal ones, but they're really their last multi-game, as in longer than 2-game road trip, is Mardi Gras. And I mean, Mardi Gras road trip's a little later than usual this year. It's February 27th through March 4th, 4 games, Lakers, Suns, Nuggets, and Jazz. And, of course, the Nuggets are the second game of a back-to-back.
Always get the Nuggets and Jazz on a road trip. Always. That's, like, the worst back-to-back in the NBA.
Yeah, and so but after March 4th, I mean, they've got a lot of home games, and they've got nothing more than a couple 2-game trips. They've got actually just five road games after that the rest of the way, and like 10 or 11 or 12 home games. So it's a strong close to the season. So they have a decent chance to go on a tear towards the end. I got actually sent a tweet about this a couple days ago and got a bunch of angry Lakers fans in my mentions because I said that the Pelicans should be favored in pretty much all of their last 14 games, except for a home game against the Rockets. And that includes the season finale against the Warriors, because I'm banking on the Warriors having locked up whatever they've locked up at that point.
Right.
And then there's a home game against the Lakers on Sunday, March 31st, which is the Pelicans will have a couple days of rest before that one. And I don't know. I think the Lakers Pelicans games will be home team favored. So for all of them. So, I mean, there's a couple tough stretches, obviously. There's going to be tough stretches for any team, but I think it's a better schedule overall than years past. We only get the Warriors three times. That's awesome.
But I think two times on the road, though. So that's not great, but I'll take it.
And if we consider the fact their last game of the season may not be a real Warriors game, that's two. And so I will absolutely take that.
Boogie's going to suit up for that.
That's a fair point. Boogie's going to play 48 for the last game of the season in New Orleans.
Boogie suits up.
Oh, man. When Eric Gordon got some serious boos his first game back in New Orleans, I'm intrigued to see how that goes the last game of the season. But yeah, I mean, I think it's better than what we've seen historically. So also funny that Utah is one of the other teams we play only three times, and we play them two times in a row. That's strange, but yeah, so those are the things kind of that caught my attention first. What about you?
So I think, as you mentioned, the league has done a really good job of reducing long road trips or long stretches of games and short days and back-to-backs and all of those things. So the league average for back-to-backs this year is 13 back-to-backs, which is, I forget how much of a reduction in years past, but it is a reduction, and the Pelicans play 13 back-to-backs. So they're not better or worse off than majority of the teams in the league. They also are about league average in games that they have rest advantage in. And, you know, slightly below league average where they have a rest disadvantage. And I was looking at some of the numbers on, you know, teams that have a rest disadvantage. And it turns out that doesn't sway the win-loss all that much.
Okay.
So it's something that impacts it, but, you know, ever so slightly. But it's good to know. It looks like it's better than years past. Now, what sort of stood out to me is, or two things kind of stood out to me. We have 13 games on national TV, which is a huge jump. And I think this is not including NBA TV.
Right.
So I think that's a huge jump. That's great. I think that it's elevating the profile of this team.
It's all TNT and ESPN. So I think it's zero ABC games. So it's all on those two networks.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And on the flip side of that, the Lakers have 43 national TV games. That's insane.
Yeah.
43. Yeah. Okay, now, what does that mean for Rondo? You think he's going to show up for all 43 of those games?
Man, levels to that, man. That's an interesting question. And if he shows up for all 43, what is playoff Rondo then? Is he too burnt out? Like, he's got to worry about those legs for a full season.
Yeah, he's definitely got to pace himself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lance needs a run point. That'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah. So on sort of the flip side of that, I was taking a peek at our fellow Western Conference competitors and how their schedules pan out. And here's some fun facts. I'm going to hate on Portland for a bit because they're easy to pick on.
Let's do it.
Portland will lead the league in miles traveled, which is not much of a surprise given their geographical location. Mm-hmm. They have the fewest games with rest advantage. They have the highest numbers of games with rest disadvantage. And their implied strength of schedule based on the Vegas over-unders is bottom five in the league, as in they have a bottom or... Maybe I should rephrase it. As in, they have a bottom five worst schedule. It's a tough schedule. It's a really tough schedule.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Mm-hmm. So, looks like they're getting the short end of the stick on multiple levels in the schedule. They didn't do much to meaningfully improve this offseason, I don't think. So, it'll be interesting to monitor them.
They lost Ed Davis, which is, I think, a bigger loss than a lot of people are giving him credit for.
I think Ed Davis was... Yeah. He was the only one that worried me when we played them, because he would get all the offensive rebounds.
Yep.
And I think, you know, there's similar stats for teams like OKC and the Lakers. And I think Denver, is in there too. Let me double check real quick. Yeah, Denver has another bad strength of schedule ranking. So there's a lot of bubble playoff teams.
What's the Pelicans?
Pelicans are league average. They're like 14 or 15.
Okay.
And then if you go to the schedule, I think there was, if you don't follow Yaya Dubin on Twitter, he had a really cool breakdown. And he had a breakdown based off of Las Vegas over-unders. And I think with the Kevin Pelton, did Pelton release over-unders or who was it? I think it was Pelton. I think ESPN had their projections, and he did one based off of that. And the Pelicans,
all off RPM.
Yeah, and the Pelicans were actually better off. Like they were like 19th in terms of strength of schedule. So, in the top half of the league in terms of difficulty or in terms of easiness. So they were better off with those projections. So either way you slice it, the Pelicans don't look to have an incredibly tough schedule like they may have had in years past. So that's really cool. Sort of like going into those over unders, did you get a chance to look at them and what do you think your thoughts are on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think given what you've told me, maybe I would take the over now, but I think the Pelicans over under is pretty fair. It's 45.5. I think they're as good or better than they were last year overall. I mean, they played great with Nico in the lineup. I don't want to fully, say that that's how they'll play for an entire season because that was their pace was kind of crazy. But I think it's so tough because I think they're a 50-win, very capable 50-win season. But then again, the West keeps getting harder and harder every year, man. And I would take the over if I was forced to choose, but I wouldn't. There are other bets that I think I would feel more comfortable with throughout the league than that one. And I don't have one off the top of my head.
So there's some wonky ones. I think the Wolves and the Nuggets are projected to be close to 50 win or over 50 win teams. I think the Wolves were like 52 or something.
I see Wolves at 45.
Oh, Wolves are 45 in the over unders.
Yeah.
Oh, I must be looking at the projections. Okay.
Oh yeah. Cause like the projections are one thing. For example, I don't think Pelton takes in consideration the fact that Jimmy Butler doesn't seem like he's thrilled to be in Minnesota. And so I'll bet you Vegas.
Having the time of his life with Sir Andrew Wiggins.
And because I mean, that Timberwolves team last year, when everyone was healthy, which is a long shot given how many minutes Tibbs plays everyone, but they were good. They were a top four seed, and I think they'll be good again. But the fact of the matter is, who knows if Jimmy Butler finishes the season in Minnesota? And because of that the over of 45 starts to look a lot less appetizing. You just don't know what what the outcome's going to be. But,
I don't know. I'm not much of a bettor, so I don't put much stock into it. But based off of last season's closeout and based off of the acquisitions that we've made this summer, I wouldn't feel bad about an over-ranking. But I think, that's what Vegas wants you to do. Vegas wants you to put the overs in. They can't be all these teams that have overs, I mean, for the record, I'm a Wolves hater through and through. I don't like them for many reasons. So if I had a bet, I'd put all the money on overs or unders for them. I'm not a big fan of Denver either. I think they on paper look very good, and they should be a fun, exciting team to watch. I just will not watch them. I don't like them. It's just another team.
Their over-under right now is 2 on Westgate. They're 47.5, 2 wins higher than the Pelicans. I don't think we have any practical evidence to suggest they're a better team than the Pelicans right now. I don't know.
For everyone that complains about the Pelicans not having a wing, name one good wing on their roster. Name one. I mean, you have Will Barton, who's great. I mean, he's fun. Is he going to play any defense ever? No. Is there anyone on that roster? How many people on that roster play defense? I can name Paul Millsap. And he's old.
Yeah. Isn't Gary Harris pretty okay on defensive end?
Yeah, but his metrics suck.
Really?
I think his offensive metrics are great, but his defensive metrics suck.
And to be fair, this isn't me saying I think the Nuggets aren't going to make the playoffs or anything. I think that I'm not as much of a Nuggets hater as you, but I and I think they'll make the playoffs, but I don't see any reasonable reason, like any justification to have their over under 2 wins higher than the Pelicans based on what we saw last season.
I know for
a decent amount of the year, but they also lost, and I know Wilson Chandler wasn't great last season and didn't really add much besides scoring, but he gave them wing depth, and to your point, they really don't have much there right now as far as the same problem the Pelicans have. And so, I'm kind of with you there. And I think it's good practice just to take the Lakers under, regardless of what. Well, it's the same thing with the Knicks, really. It's the big markets where they're going to get a lot of bettors who just say, screw it, like, I'm a Lakers fan or whatever. And granted, the Knicks are over-unders at 29.5, and I don't know how good I'd feel about going under that number. But with the Lakers, they're at 48.5, and I don't know.
LeBron, I don't see that. 48 in the West?
LeBron's going to take games off. Like, not just not playing defense. I mean, like, actually take games off. Like, I don't know. I don't see that roster of players – getting to that level. I mean, they could win 50 games, but just like with the late, based on all the other over-unders in the Western Conference, you know, like the Pelicans at 45.5, Denver 47.5, Utah 48.5, Thunder 50.5, like something's got to give. And I'm absolutely in on the Lakers as a playoff team. I'm very much not in on the Lakers is kind of like a good bet for 50 wins. So,
are you more in on the Lakers than you are the Spurs as a playoff team?
Yes, it's tough, but I've got the Blazers and Spurs as the two teams under that line. I think
Spurs make it. I'm a Wolves and Nuggets hater. I think one of those teams miss.
Yeah, I mean, if Butler ends up gone for some reason, then that's. I can obviously see that, but I think it with the teams in place that are in place right now, I take the Spurs and Blazers missing the playoffs. But I get the Spurs argument for sure. I have the Blazers as 10th, and I have the Spurs as 9th. If that gives any additional clarity, and so, I just don't buy into the Spurs defense this year. I think they lost two very very capable, very strong perimeter defenders who are not Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, and who's the wing they just lost to Memphis?
Kyle Anderson.
Kyle Anderson, yeah. And so, like, those guys both graded out very well defensively last year, and I just don't know. Like, Rudy Gay is he played well last year off an Achilles injury, but he's not getting any younger, and his defense is not going to get any better. And DeRozan doesn't exactly have a defensive reputation, and so I don't know. I just don't see, and I respect Pop more than any coach has ever lived, but I don't see where the defense comes from, and that worries me for them.
Yeah, if Pop pulls out a top five defense on that team, I'm going to recommend they all get tested for something.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, it's like as we're all this conversation goes to show, it's a gauntlet, and it's more of a gauntlet every year, it seems like. So we'll see. It'll be a roller coaster.
Cool. Well, I think with that said, it brings us to a good segment to transition to. We have a pretty cool guest lined up, and we're going to take a break to bring him on, so stay tuned.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.